Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. I hope you had a good week. You'll have to bear with me a little bit here. I have a little case of spring fever, so part of my brain is still out playing in the dirt. I'm Jim Hansen. I'll be your board rep. And there are a variety of announcements in your order of service, which we encourage you to take home with you. And a couple other announcements we have. If you are a member, feel free to sign up for mowing duties over the summer. And I invite you to greet those sitting around you. And right now, Sue Blackwell will have an announcement on our stewardship campaign.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Easter. Before I make the announcements regarding stewardship, I just personally want to thank Jim and the board for their tremendous support of the stewardship campaign this year. Their commitment and their being role models in terms of their giving, I think, have made a really big difference in the giving and activity this year. So thank you. Okay, last week we had 12 new pledges. Those 12 pledges increased their pledges 17% over last year. Seven were sustainers, one tithed. So we continue to have pledges at a 70% sustainer level. The total number of pledges is $107,618. So 39% of the pledges have brought in 62% of the budget. So our goal for this week, which is the last week that you can pledge, or the last week of the stewardship campaign, I should say, is that the other 65 pledges that are out there need to be collected so that we can make up the last 48% of the budget. Thank you. Oh, and a reminder, this is also the last week for the tiles, so there will be tiles to decorate after the service. Thank you.
And thank you, Sue. If you're visiting with us today, we particularly welcome you, and if you're comfortable doing so, we invite you to introduce yourself.
Welcome. I'm Mark Hornsby. This is my daughter Annika. This is my son Alex. This is my wife Olga. And this is my mom, who is visiting from Midland, Michigan. She's at UU there.
Welcome. And if you're new to our community and would like to know more about our church or Unitarian Universalism, you're welcome to meet with Reverend Hobart and myself in his office after the service. If you would just like to talk to me about becoming a member, I'll be available afterwards. If you're visiting with your children, it's our custom for the children to remain with us until after the story for all ages, at which time they go to their religious education classes.
Which they will not do today.
Which they will not do today. So your child is welcome to join us in the service, I'm thinking. Okay, that takes a long time. Boy, like I say, might not all be all here today, or all be here today. Glad you're all here today. Please put your cell phones on silence during the service. I hope you find this morning's service inspiring and fulfilling. Our speaker today is our own Reverend James Hobart. And John Kuhn is our worship associate. So I will turn it over to him. Thank you.
We come together on Easter morn to bear witness to the triumph of life and the ongoing resurrection of the human spirit. Again and yet again, forces of death try to silence voices of liberation and freedom by cutting down the bearers of the good news, and seek to destroy those who work for compassion and peace and justice. And again, liberation and freedom arise through fresh voices and new acts which renew the promise and restore life. Our chalice flame serves as a symbol for all who carry forward the vision of a world renewed, its people revived, restored through their courage, expectation, and determination in service of the common weal. Let us be bearers of this freeing faith. Let us be confident the world awaited may yet be a world attained. And may the light from each of our lives and the light of our life together illumine the way ahead. In this spirit this morning, we light our chalice. And now for our opening hymn, number 270, I invite you to rise in body or in spirit and let us sing together.
Thank you.
standing, and let us turn in our hymn books to the Congregational In Gathering, number 628. And we will read responsively. In the tomb of the soul, we carry secret yearnings, pains, frustrations, loneliness, fears, regrets, worries.
In the tomb of the soul, we take refuge from the world and its heaviness.
In the tomb of the soul, we wrap ourselves in the security of darkness.
Sometimes this is a comfort, sometimes it is an escape.
Sometimes it prepares us for experience, sometimes it insulates us from life.
Sometimes this tomb life gives us time to feel the pain of the world and to reach out to heal others. Sometimes it numbs us and locks us up with our own concerns.
In this season where light and dark balance the day, we seek balance for ourselves.
Grateful for the darkness that has nourished us, we push away the stone and invite the light to awaken us to the possibilities within us and among us, possibilities for new life in ourselves and in our world.
Please be seated. Well, now, ooh, this is really live this morning, a live Easter. This is the time for the story, and if any of you, both youth and adults, would like to come down to the front, I invite you to do so now. Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Here we are on Easter morning. And this morning, my story will be a life of Jesus. It says in the order of service, the life of Jesus. But the thing about that is there are several different stories about the life of Jesus. In fact, in the Christian scriptures, there are four different stories about the life of Jesus. So I'm going to tell you a story about the life of Jesus, not the story. Well, who was Jesus? Jesus lived about 2,000 years ago, and he grew up in Nazareth, a town called Nazareth, in a region called Galilee, which is now part of the nation of Israel. His father's name was Joseph, and he was a carpenter. And Jesus probably, growing up, became a carpenter too. His mother's name was Mary. Jesus, like his family, and nearly everyone at that time in the country town of Nazareth, was Jewish. We really don't know very much about Jesus' life when he was growing up. We do know he had brothers and sisters. We do know that from an early age, Jesus was very interested in learning all he could about his Jewish religion. We know that, like many Jews in his time, as well as Jews who live in our time, he was most interested in learning how to live out good relationships among all people, both those who were Jewish and those who were not. We began to know more about Jesus during the years he was in his late 20s and early 30s. He became a Jewish religious teacher, and he was called Rabbi by people who heard him speak and who followed him. And some of those who heard him did become his friends and followers. And Jesus and his followers traveled around the countryside of Galilee, stopping from time to time in the towns or in the countryside. His closest friends and companions were 12 people who became known as Jesus' disciples. Wherever he went, Jesus talked with people about his vision of a time yet to come, in the future, a time he called the kingdom or the realm of God, when people would live in peace with one another and practice justice and compassion towards all people. When asked about the time to come, Jesus told stories about what it would be like. And these stories are called parables. Perhaps you have heard some of these parables, like the parable of the Good Samaritan, a story about a man who helped another man he did not know, who had been beaten and robbed on a country road. Some of Jesus' parables, his stories, criticized many of the religious leaders and teachers of his day because he said they were not practicing justice and compassion and peace as Judaism expected of all its followers. In words that we would use today, Jesus was a religious and social reformer. He was especially concerned for those who were poor and those who were sick in body or in spirit, and for anyone who was treated with disrespect by others, for those who were persecuted for their religious and social views. Well, Jesus decided he would leave Galilee and take his followers and his teaching and preaching to the city of Jerusalem, which was the religious and the political capital of the country. And they arrived there in time for the Jewish festival of Passover, the time when Jews then and Jews today celebrate the escape of their ancestors from slavery. In Jerusalem, Jesus continued to teach and to preach, to tell parables about the coming time, the realm of God, when people would live together in peace. He went to the temple in Jerusalem, a sacred religious site for Jews, and he confronted people who were conducting business at this holy place, and he turned over some tables where people were exchanging money. Well, almost immediately, the religious authorities and the political authorities of Jerusalem were very concerned about what Jesus and his followers were doing. They saw these people as dangerous religious radicals who were upsetting the social order and well-being. They thought Jesus' teaching was a threat to their positions of authority. So soon Jesus was arrested. His followers were frightened for their lives, and almost all of them ran away or hid, including all of his disciples. A trial was quickly held, and Jesus was found guilty, and he was taken to a place where people were crucified. That is, they were put to death by nailing them to and hanging them from a cross. Jesus and some other men were crucified that day, and soon he was dead. His body was carried away and buried in a tomb, and the entry was closed by a large stone, and it seemed like this was the end of the religious movement that Jesus had led. He was dead. His followers were hiding out. They were frightened and discouraged. They were deeply saddened and in mourning because their leader was dead. And then something extraordinary and totally unexpected happened on the day we call Easter. Jesus' followers and disciples began to come out of hiding, and they gathered together again. They began to remember his religious teaching, and they wanted to still follow the way of life, the way of respect and care for everyone that he had preached. It was as if Jesus was still with them because his teachings and his way of life were still with them. Well, there are a number of different ways that people look at what happened when Jesus died, when his disciples came back together. Among Unitarian Universalists, one of the ways we have understood what happened among Jesus' followers is that they were convinced it was impossible to stop his religion of respect and care for everyone by killing him. Even after he was dead, Jesus and his ways lived on in the lives of his followers as they practice a religion of respect and care. So on Easter, we Unitarian Universalists remember Jesus and his followers and the way of life that they lived, and we pledge to live this kind of life ourselves. And this is one way we celebrate Easter. People in other religious communities have other religious beliefs, and some of them are very different from ours. And all we ask is that we respect the right to their beliefs, and we ask in return that they respect ours. So, that's our story for this morning. And now, I think we're going to sing a hymn together. And I think we have some song leaders, because this is a new song. Gaudiamus Hodie, which is number 390. It means, let us be joyful together.
Thank you. Now it's time for our joys and concerns of the day. And if you have a deep joy or a deep concern, special joy or deep concern that you'd like to share with us, I'll light a candle for you, and please tell us your name when you share the joy or concern, and I'll light a candle for you. And I'll light our first candle, our memorial candle today, in thoughts of renewal. This is kind of a time of renewal. I think that's a good thing to reflect on.
Good morning, my name's Will, and our family would like a candle of joy in that my eldest daughter, Nikki, has set a date to be married of June 30th.
My name is Kathy. I'd like a candle of concern, please, for my mother-in-law, who has had mild Alzheimer's, was taken to the hospital a week ago with a high fever, which turned out to be sinusitis, given antibiotics, and that's fine, but it was just a horrible setback for her mentally, and she's just plunged into just much more severe problems with her Alzheimer's and is now in a nursing home, and it's not clear if she's going to bounce back.
Good morning, my name is Jim. If you would like two candles of concern for member Ray Grosh, one for his mother who has taken a turn for the worse, and one for him because he's just found out he'll have to have that kidney removed, and in 3 weeks, if all the infection is gone, he will be going in for surgery.
Hello, my name is Lois, and my good friend Shirley lost her husband yesterday. I don't know if this is a joy or a concern. I think it's both a joy for him and a concern for her, just for her mental health. Thanks.
This is Laura. I have a joy. Chris White invited me into her apartment, so we are going to minimize and simplify and join forces and just get out and live the life we want to live.
Hi, my name is Helen. If you could write a candle of concern for Janica Yoder. She helped out with the middle school youth con last week, which was wonderful. But doing the salsa, she had an injury. That was like one of the first events. And so she's ill and not doing well. I don't think it was because of the salsa, but I think it was because of the injury. I think she bruised a rib. And the other one is a candle of concern for just our family. We have a now 21-year-old, and we gave her roots, but we've been trying to give her wings, and it's like, just a really rough time at our house lately.
And I'll light one last candle for those joys and concerns we hold in our hearts today.
Let us join together in a time of meditation and reflection and prayer. Foundation of all, sustainer of life, power of love, addressed by many names or by no name at all. Sustaining our being and our becoming. upholding our every meeting one with another, underlying our every encounter with the world and all the world's creatures and features. We gather together here today to offer gratitude for the gift of life and our many opportunities and our many challenges. We come together in religious community to affirm the tenacity of life in the face of destruction, to celebrate the power of the human spirit to overcome death-dealing ways. We affirm the common humanity of all persons and the unique individuality of each person. We seek to serve and to enhance both. We acknowledge here our acts of omission and commission that fall short of this service. And we turn within and we turn toward one another, seeking forgiveness, even as we offer forgiveness to one another and to ourselves. Here and now, we seek support from one another to live more fully and to serve more truly our vision of the beloved community, large enough to include us all and wide enough to embrace all humankind. And now let us continue in the spirit of prayer and meditation and reflection in silence. Amen. Now let us remain seated and join together in singing hymn number 123, Spirit of Life.
Join in that. called Easter Morning. On the first day of the week, at early dawn, they came to the tomb, saying,
"Who will roll away the stone from the entrance to the tomb?"
They looked up and saw that the stone had already been rolled back, and on the right they saw a young man. They were alarmed, but the man said to them,
"Why do you seek the living among the dead?"
So they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them. And they said nothing, for they were afraid.
Easter morning, the first Easter morning, what in the world happened? Some people and some religious traditions are very clear that they know what happened. They understand the resurrection to mean literally that Jesus rose from the dead. However, the four gospel accounts, one of which we just heard a moment ago, the four gospel accounts are far from clear and far from in agreement on what happened the first Easter morning. One gospel relates that there were earthquakes. The other three do not. One gospel reports that there was a white-clad figure at the tomb. Another that there were two figures. Mary Magdalene is reported to have arrived first, and perhaps she was joined by Mary, the mother of the disciple James, and the mother of Jesus, and the mother and a woman named Joanna. But perhaps not. Perhaps her name was Salome. Or perhaps there were several unnamed women. One gospel reports that Peter and another of the disciples were there. And another gospel suggests that the women went to tell the disciples what they had experienced, and that the disciples did not believe them. There is confusion. There is a lack of agreement, even about the central figure of this drama, Jesus himself. And questions abound. Did Jesus himself appear at the tomb? Did he appear later? And if so, where? And who saw him? And what did Jesus say and what did he do? Frederick Buechner, a committed Christian, says this: "The narrative is fragmented, shadowy. It is incomplete as life itself. And when it comes to just what happened, there can be no certainty." Well, there can be no certainty. And yet certainty is what many people, perhaps most people, want the most. Some want certainty that Jesus literally and physically rose from the dead. And some others want certainty that he did not. However, there is no certainty. What we have, rather, is interpretation. We have many interpretations. There are opinions, many opinions. And that, my friends, is the very nature of religious interpretation and religious opinion. That indeed is the nature of religious faith, whether it be conservative or liberal, whether it be literal or metaphorical and poetic. Hear Frederick Buechner again. "He rose. A few saw him briefly and talked to him. If it is true, there is nothing left to say. And And if it is not true, there is nothing left to say. Well, I would say yes and no. There has been plenty said over the centuries on every possible side of the question, and there is plenty still being said today. We Unitarian Universalists lie on the liberal end of the interpretation and opinion spectrum. Historically, we Unitarians were the first Christians to affirm the unity of God. We were then, and we are today, Unitarians, while the majority of Christians in society are Trinitarians. And of course, add to that over the years, many Unitarian Universalists today do not consider themselves Christian, while others do. Well, if we are Unitarians, we did and we do affirm the full humanity of Jesus. Like the early Trinitarians, the early Unitarians based their interpretation and their opinion on their reading of Scripture, their reading of the Bible. Well, that is one side of our liberal religious story. There is another side that is at least as important. In fact, I would want to maintain that it is more important than our Unitarian theology. And it is this: the foundation and the true measure of any religion is not its beliefs, no matter how correct the beliefs may be. The foundation and the true measure of all religion is the difference it makes in the life of individuals and societies. The liberal interpretation and opinion is succinctly and well stated by the letter of James in the Christian Scriptures. James asks, "What good is it, my friends, for someone to say he has faith when his actions do nothing to show it? Can that faith save him? Suppose a man or a woman is in rags, with not enough food for the day, and one of you says, 'Goodbye, keep warm and have a good meal,' but does nothing to supply their bodily needs, what good is that?" And then James answers the question himself. So it is with faith. If it does not lead to action, it is by itself a lifeless thing. And then James says, "Show me this faith you speak of, while no actions to prove it, while I by my actions will prove to you my faith." And he concludes, "As the body is dead when there is no breath left in it, so faith, divorced from action, is dead." So the question is still this: what difference does your faith, does my faith make? And does our faith make in the ways that we live our lives? What difference does a liberal religious faith make in the way we live our lives? And what difference does it make in the kind of society we live in? The measure is not our beliefs, but whether or not our beliefs lead us to change our lives, whether they lead us into the service of compassion and justice and peace and equity and love. In the Easter morning story, according to the Gospel of Luke, the figure in the tomb asked those who came there that morning, "Why search among the dead for one who is alive? We do not have to base our religious faith in a literal religious interpretation and opinion to appreciate that is our question too. Our religious faith will not be alive if we are forever rummaging around among dead places, attempting to prove or to discredit what occurred in that tomb the first Easter morning. Our religious faith becomes alive when we are fully alive in service. So it is relationship, not belief, that is our first measure of our liberal religious faith. And there is no question that following Easter morn, the lives of Jesus' followers were changed. They were transformed by the relationship that they had with Jesus and by their experience after his crucifixion and death, that this kind of relationship was still alive in their lives. Well, what are we serving? What is alive in our lives? These are the simple questions with very complex answers that each of us and all of us face every day. And our every answer will bring changes to our lives and to the life of the world. Our faith answers bring faith changes. Change that is alive, but that is often too unsettling. James Baldwin says a profound change, any real change, implies the breakup of the world as one has always known it, the loss of all that gave one identity, the end of safety. And he continues, and at such a moment, unable to see and not daring to imagine what the future will now bring forth, one clings to what one knows or thought one knew. One clings to what one possessed or dreamed one possessed. And then he says, yet it is only when a person is able, without bitterness or self-pity, to surrender a dream that has long been cherished or a privilege that has long been possessed, that one is set free, that one sets oneself free for higher dreams, for greater privileges. Easter's faith is about finding the courage to face the change that will break up the world as one has always known it, the loss of all that gave one identity, the end of safety. And this is the religious challenge that still lies for us in the angel's question at the tomb, as reported in the gospel. Why search among the dead for one who is alive? The question for us is this: do we choose to be among the religious dead, or are we choosing to be among the religious living? Our religious answer will be discovered not in the words of our mouths, but found in the service of our hands and our hearts and our minds and our lives. Amen. I guess we're ready for our offertory.
And our offertory this morning consists of two parts, as you can see in your order of service. The first one will be, as it usually is, where our ushers will pass the baskets and we will receive your gift to the church. And the second part of the offering is where you will actually receive from the church. And the Religious Education Committee put together 3 baskets full of eggs, and in each egg is a message. And it's intended to be a thought-provoking message. And they also thought that the kids could help participate in this. And we have such a light turnout, I think, with spring break. The families with children are all on vacation, I think. But we have a few kids here, and I think so. We've got 3 adults who will help pass the baskets. If we've got 3 kids that would like to participate in that, that would be good. Otherwise, the 3 adults will pass the eggs for the second part of our offertory here. So, do we have our 3 adults that have passed? Great.
It's much in keeping with this morning's service. Go confidently in the direction of your dreams. Live the life you have imagined. Henry David Thoreau. Anybody else want to share theirs? Yes. Yes, Kathy. Speak up.
This is thought-provoking. The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain.
Good. Yes, in the back.
The winds of grace are always blowing, but you have to raise the sail.
These are quite profound, aren't they? Yes, Robin.
The capacity to care is the thing which gives life its deepest meaning and significance.
Thank you. Well, maybe after the service we can share them at coffee hour. Al Haskell, do you have something to share with us this morning?
So this may be a shock, but I actually have something formally prepared. So, my good people, I do appreciate this opportunity of testimony to speak with you about my experience, my connection, my value, and my commitment here to LCUUC. Now, some of you may remember from the fall of last year where I gave yet another unscheduled announcement. And I asked, do we come in or do we come out of LCUUC? So today I thought I'd try to provide some insight as to how that relates to me. So if you'll work with me here, close your eyes. Try to get yourself to a quiet, remember in the beginning, oh sorry, no humor. In 15 years ago, there was nothing. We did not have a UU church or a liberal religious presence in Lake Country. Yet there were a handful of visionaries who decided we must. They organized and then brought together some 34 or so charter members, holding a meeting in a Delafield Elementary School library one evening. And together, we created something from nothing. We started without a minister, RE teachers, hymnals, a space to worship or to gather within. There was just this dream to have a liberal religious community to serve Lake Country. Truly, we had only those assets that each individual and that together we could bring. All right, those of you that are playing along, open your eyes. Well, as you can imagine, in those early years, many of us found ourselves doing things we'd never done or perhaps assumed that we could not do well or, frankly, really didn't want to do. Now, that first year, I was asked to be an RE teacher. Yes, I have an ego. I was cajoled. There's a young lady in the room looking at me who said to me, "You know, Al, you would be good at this, and we really need you." Let me share with you that I would never have volunteered to teach children. And the idea of engaging or the thought of caring for and mentoring for youth or truly connecting in any sort of meaningful way was simply something I avoided. Truthfully, I was afraid. I was afraid to open myself to others. Are you kidding me? Let me ask you, no raise of hands. Anybody else grow up in a non-Lake Wobegon situation. Dysfunctional family, alcoholism. Not saying that was me. It was. Well, that really did and continues to affect my ability to be intimate, my ability to trust, my ability to emotionally connect, my ability to share and be who I am truly with others. Well, so in that first year, I found myself as an RE teacher. Lucky for me, they put me with the real little ones. I could probably handle those questions. I had Jim Tyler with me, known as the Cookie Monster. That helped too. Again, remember I was brought up in that children are maybe seen, certainly not heard, certainly not engaged, certainly not on the same level. So there I was in our first year as an RE teacher, scared, relying a lot on Jim, relying on others. That idea of relying on others was also foreign. So what happened? Well, I became very committed and very involved with the youth here. In a real sense, your children became my children. I taught, or was taught, almost 14 years. This is the first year I've not been involved in RE from a classroom perspective. And I work from itty bitty to the high school level. And learned many things from our youth. I learned that I didn't have to have an answer. I could answer a question with a question. Through this personal growth, I've changed. Through this experience, I decided and helped promote intergenerational activity. I learn from the kids. Hopefully the kids learn some things from me. But the idea of young and old doing things together, whether that's in service or whether that's in play, is a great value that I think we share here. There's a give and get from those interactions. It's easier for me today since there aren't many of our youth in here, but I'll talk about them. I like to think of them as small adults. I don't like to think of them as kids. Of course, many of them think of me as a kid, which is fine. And perhaps some of you adults think of me as a little childish too, which probably is truthful and also fine. But I always feel that our youth are not just part of us, they're really a driving force of this deeply caring community. Hopefully they're molded in love, kindness, and liberal thinking, held in a common awareness. And individually, they have their own ways of decisioning, their own thought process, their own beliefs, their own paths. They form their own spiritual perception. They all seem to embrace a very strong concern for social action, and they take action, like you do. They want to make a positive impact in their communities. They've been exposed to our 7 founding principles. They've been supported by our church family. with these multi-generational interactions. And frankly, they've become or are becoming, in my mind, simply amazing people. They are the Lake Wobegon kids. I cherish this experience and this interaction that I have with our younger people. I've been involved in so many different things, and I ask you all to look for opportunities like I've had, whether it be camping, whether it be river trips, whether it be talks and stories, whether it be going on service trips, whether it be going to a member's house and simply helping out with them for things that perhaps physically they can't do. Cleaning garbage out from the side of the road, from a lake. Through these experiences, I've been challenged, humbled, inspired, and yes, rewarded with, I hope, becoming a better person. I hope I'm less selfish. I hope our youth gain something in value into heart and thought and spirit from what I've gained. But there's an imbalance. I've gained more. Today, when I see a young person in this church and I ask, how are you doing? It's not, how you doing? Yeah, how you doing? I want to know. I want to care. I want to help. So, standing before you, I'm not the same person that I was before I came into or come out of this church. Recently, I heard a song, kind of a quirky song, spoke to me though. It said, "Everything is broken, we are all broken." There's much more to it, but that wholeness challenge, I hope I'm not alone in trying to find. So I think I'm still a bit broken. But without this church and community, without all of you, without our youth, without these experiences, without these connections, I'd be a lot more self-centered. And likely socially disconnected. And I certainly wouldn't dream of sharing this, my personal intimacy, with you. So, let me just close by saying that I feel this is a special place. It's a meaningful place for all of you. It's a special and meaningful place to come in and to come out of. There is an open opportunity for you to start something meaningful, to create what you need, what we need, what our community needs, what our world needs. So I'll ask you, what do you need? What is missing for you?
Thank you, Al, for sharing your inspiration on this last week of our stewardship campaign. Our congregational affirmation is number 470 in the gray hymnal. joined in the italicized. We affirm the unfailing renewal of life,
rising from the earth and reaching for the sun, all living creatures shall fulfill themselves.
We affirm the steady growth of human companionship,
rising from ancient cradles and reaching for the stars, people the world over shall sing the praises of understanding.
We affirm a continuing hope.
Now every tragedy, spirits and individuals shall rise and build a better world.
And our closing hymn is in the turquoise hymnal, and it's number 1028. Please stand as you're willing and able.
That you picked up off the pulpit. This is not the first time this has ever happened to me. Why don't you read it, or just if you read it good and loud.
We go forth now. May we be confident the human spirit can rise from every challenge. May we know loving ways transcend our uncertainty and fear. Let us seek a vision and a promise of a beloved community, broad enough to embrace each and all, and large enough to uphold the world.
Amen.
If you want to share or keep your eggs, we could put the empty eggs up in the basket. Thanks.